Welcome to the Biology of Trauma podcast, the show that provides professionals with the knowledge and tools for effective, science-based solutions for the trauma healing journey. I am your host, Dr. Amy, and I've done the hard work so you can stop your endless searching, have a roadmap for your own work, and be able to help others more powerfully. Welcome to this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Amy. In this episode, I want to share with you what I have been learning about a hypersensitive and hyperreactive gut. To do that, I am going to focus on a pattern of symptoms called irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS. Where does it come from? What are its origins? What are the solutions? How is it related to trauma, the nervous system? That is what we're going to go into in this episode. What I will share might just shock you. I have been surprised myself. It might give you that deeper insight into, oh, I didn't know how scared I really was as a young child. Maybe we have downplayed our fears and emotions that we experienced when we were kids. We didn't think it was trauma. Maybe we don't even remember feeling scared. But there are messages that our gut tells us because of its intimate connection with our autonomic nervous system. We will be answering the question, what is the specific attachment trauma pattern most commonly associated with IBS? In this podcast, you will learn the common misconceptions around IBS and mental health, the specific emotion during our attachment years that is connected with IBS, the concept of global high intensity activation and its role in gut hypersensitivity, how do we address hypersensitivity and hyperreactivity of the gut, and examining the interventions and how to personalize them that can help address IBS symptoms and improve our quality of life. Ready to go deep? Let's jump in. One of the things that we want to look at in this connection between early childhood and neurodevelopment and how it progresses to disease is some of the early effects of what would be considered an experience of terror for an infant. And it's different than just an experience of stress. This is an experience where it feels at the level of, I may not survive this, which at that time in our life would have generated a sensation of terror, a life terror. This is a life threat. I may not survive. And as we look at the nervous system of a baby, we see many opportunities for that kind of an experience because of just how fragile they are as they're developing, even in utero. They are very fragile. Their nervous system is not yet developed. And so exposures in utero can create that sensation for the nervous system of, I may not survive this. It's inescapable because I can't leave this place where I am. So this is an inescapable life threat and generates a sensation and an experience in the nervous system of terror. And even birth trauma can be an experience of, oh, I may not survive this, whether that's a cord wrapped around our neck, all kinds of stress from a medical standpoint. We just wait and give medications or we do an emergency C-section, not realizing that the impact on the infant has been one of terror. In medical terminology, we call that fetal distress. That's not really accurate. That is fetal terror. I may not survive this. And when we look at why would that be the experience, it really comes down to the nervous system and its role in our life is to keep us alive. And so if it feels like there is a life threat, it is going to have that response of terror. I may not survive this. And it goes into any and every strategy that is necessary to attempt to survive. Now, its strategies are limited at that time. And that's what can create so many downstream problems because it has to rely on strategies that then become habituated. They become the default way that we respond to everything, because it happened during an early period of neurodevelopment. This is different than if we go through our neurodevelopment and then we have an experience of terror. It's not getting wired into our nervous system as this is how we respond to everything in life, which is what our body and nervous system is doing during neurodevelopment. It's gathering information so that it can help us survive all of life. And so it assumes that if we have an experience of terror, life must be full of terror. And so how can I best adapt? And when that happens early on, include in utero experience, the first 6 months of life, there's a specific term that we can use to describe what happens to the autonomic nervous system. Global high intensity activation. There is this constant sense of impending terror. So that even if it's not real, there's a sense that, but it could just be right around the corner. It's not safe to relax. It's not safe to go into parasympathetic. It's not safe to have a pause to repair and replenish my cells with nutrients. We're constantly in stress because there's terror right around the corner. Because our nervous system has collected the information and come to the conclusion that life is full of terror. There's this activation that's chronic. There's never a relaxation of that activation. It's global, meaning it's our whole nervous system and it's a chronic baseline. How does this impact and relate to the gut? Let me introduce you to IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. This is a common GI disorder with an estimated prevalence of 5 to 20%, depending on which research you're looking at. And according to studies, it accounts for up to 3% of all general practice visits and up to 40% of all GI referrals. 40% of all people being referred to a GI physician are ultimately going to get a diagnosis of IBS. This is considerable morbidity, meaning the burden on society for IBS, that it represents that many physician visits. And the symptoms of IBS are general ones that include abdominal pain, bloating, and maybe some alteration in gut motility. And even that's where it starts to get even more vague. It can be constipation, it can be diarrhea, it can be both, but the main features are pain and bloating. This is not a life-threatening condition, which leads to some of the frustration for those who ultimately get diagnosed with IBS because they're given this message of, well, we don't know what's causing it and we don't know what to do because there's not really anything wrong with you. And that's where some people have often gotten the message from their practitioners of, think it's all in your head. I want you to do stress management. And then that leads to even more what I would consider medical trauma, where now I don't even feel safe in this relationship with my practitioner because they think I'm making this up. They think I'm exaggerating the pain that I feel that I am in. Why would this happen? To really understand the direct correlation between childhood terror, early life terror, and IBS, because it's going to give us our solution out of it. I am reminded of Emily, and she shared this in a masterclass that I was teaching on gut health. She said that she had a lot of night terrors as a toddler and would cry and cry and cry. And her parents would tell her, why are you crying? What are you crying about? So even as she just told me that, I knew that she had experiences in her childhood of terror and feeling alone in that terror because the adults did not understand her. And so in IBS, the nervous system is constantly rhyming for this threat response, even when there's no danger present. That is the classic of the autonomic nervous system coming out of our childhood when we experienced terror. Now our nervous system is primed to always feel that there is danger and terror. And the result of that is constant sensitivity and reactivity of the autonomic nervous system and then of the gut. The gut and the autonomic nervous system are closely connected between the relationship of the vagus nerve and the enteric nervous system. That enteric nervous system is all those nerves in our gut. And the vagus nerve is what connects that with our central nervous system. And so the vagus nerve is really what communicates either rest and digest of parasympathetic or freeze and shut down of the trauma response. So what that means is that for a nervous system coming out of childhood, primed to have a life of terror and having its activation always on, activation is what will generate the sympathetic response. The sympathetic response is what's communicated down our spine. We have a sympathetic nerve chain that goes down both sides of our spine. And that's what generates a stress response. That is what generates the adrenaline and what would be considered noradrenaline or norepinephrine. What is significant about that is that when that system is on, its end fibers for those nerves coming out of our spine go into the gut, and it's constantly releasing those hormones that put a stop to everything. So the sympathetic regulation of our gut is to take blood away from our gut to our muscles so that we can run from that tiger and to shut things down in our digestive system. We're supposed to be running from a tiger. We're not supposed to be eating and digesting food. That is what will contribute to the constipation of IBS. However, we have this response in the body to freeze and shut down. So how does that play a role in IBS? Let me revisit the three states of our nervous system because that will guide us into understanding what happens and how this turns into IBS. And as we look at the stress response, we are reminded that it has a critical line of overwhelm, meaning it's fine to stay in stress response as long as it can generate an increase in energy production, energy utilization. And so as long as we can sustain a stress response, we stay up here in sympathetic. The moment that anything feels too much too fast or too little for too long, our nervous system is going to switch states and go into the dorsal vagal freeze. And what happens with our nervous system when it's primed from childhood for this global high intensity activation, our nervous system is constantly already up here in sympathetic state. We're not down in parasympathetic. Then if it gets overwhelmed, it goes down into that dorsal vagal freeze. And we're there for as long as our body needs to be there. And then it comes out of that dorsal vagal freeze back into the sympathetic state because it's wondering, is the threat still here? When we have global high intensity activation, our nervous system, neuroception, is telling us, yes, the threat is still here. It didn't go anywhere. The threat is still here. And so once again, the system goes back down into the dorsal vagal freeze. So that IBS is not the result of a chronic stress response, nor is it the result of a chronic freeze response. IBS is one of the classic diagnoses of the up and down cycling between both sympathetic stress and overwhelm and terror. Now, there are two other classic features of IBS that you need to know about. And as I go back to what Emily shared during my masterclass, it was no surprise that what she shared was her whole life. The physical pain in my gut and the digestive issues have been so intense. Are you going to tell her that it's all in her head? She's telling us that the degree of pain that she feels is so intense that I know it really was holding her back in her work, in her life. The features that are present with IBS reflect what's happening in the autonomic nervous system. It's an exact mirror of each other, which again gives us our path out. This is what's happening in both the nervous system and IBS. There is this baseline activation. And so with that, there's going to be that baseline activation in our gut as well. We never feel like it's completely gone. We may have a good day, but a good day means my pain level was 2. It doesn't mean that I had no pain. There's always something, and people just learn to manage. But then there's these other elements. And the other element is hypersensitivity. And this is hypersensitivity in the autonomic nervous system. And so this would be where we see people are hypersensitive to everything. They're emotionally sensitive people. They are light sensitive, perhaps. They are sound sensitive, perhaps. They are sensitive people because that's their nervous system. That's what this global high intensity activation creates in their system. That leads to the next element, which is hyperreactive. So that if I'm hypersensitive, I'm going to not only be reacting, I'm going to be hyperreacting. And by that, I mean either hyperreacting with stress response, meaning I'm responding with more energy and activation than what is appropriate, or I've gone into the freeze. And so what would appear to others is I'm underreacting. These are the elements of the global high intensity activation and IBS. So that in those with IBS, what happens is that their digestive system is more sensitive to foods. Many times they feel like they can't eat anything because their system reacts to everything. They have reactions and they don't even know what they're reacting to. They do a food sensitivity panel and it may or may not come back with anything because it's not just the food sensitivities, it's just the sensitivity. Other elements that are really important for you to know. They are hypersensitive to pain. They are hypersensitive to stretch receptors that are in our gut called mechanoreceptors so that our nervous system is able to know and sense how much distension there is because that's how it knows how to move content through our bowels and digestive system. And normally that would all be under our conscious awareness, except when we have a very sensitive and very reactive nervous system. And then as things stretch or as things are not stretched enough, all of that irritates our nervous system and we feel pain. And so a person with IBS can have the same amount of gas as another person without IBS, but the person with IBS is going to be in so much more pain. And it's not in their head, it's in their nervous system. Their nervous system is more sensitive, is more reactive. You can have a person with gluten sensitivity, and the person with IBS and gluten sensitivity will have a much bigger reaction than the person without IBS, simply because the nervous system is wired to be more sensitive and more reactive. Then what do we do about that? If the majority of the problem is the increased sensitivity and increased reactivity, then that's where we really need to go because that's going to give us the biggest results for the work that we do. Yes, we need to still do a food diary and figure out all of those foods that we're reacting to. That will be part of it. However, if we can just decrease the amount of sensitivity we have, it's going to help with our reactivity to all of those foods so that we're in a little less pain. And for someone with IBS, if they even go down from a pain level of 7 to a pain level of 6, that may be a really good day for them. That may be the difference between them having the energy to play with their grandkids or not. That may be the difference between being able to make it to an important business meeting or not. So even just being able to decrease the sensitivity and the reactivity a little bit, not 100%, but a little bit, is where we make the most difference with the symptoms and the degree of impact that it has on a person's life. So how do we do that? What we do is we look at what are those elements that contribute to regulation of the system. That's what we're needing to accomplish, regulation of the system. And that reminds me, we talk about regulation, aren't we just talking about attachment and early childhood? Because our definition of attachment is that it is the degree of regulation that we have in our system coming out of our childhood. So that means that a person with IBS can have the best parents in the world, but simply because of how their nervous system is wired, that is dysregulated, they will have an insecure attachment style. They're wired for perceiving terror. That is an insecure attachment. That is not a secure attachment. And so when we talk about regulation, we're still really talking about also attachment. And the work that we do with regulation will not just help the IBS, but it will help their rewiring and repairing of their attachment. And so we look at those three elements to regulate reactivity. How do we regulate reactivity? Well, we know the answer to that. There's three elements that go into regulating reactivity. We get to start with somatic work and the body. We get to work with parts and one's thoughts and their belief system, because that will contribute to reactivity. And then we've got some biology work to do that will be part of regulating the reactivity of our nervous system, and especially in our gut. We know this from the studies showing the effect of serotonin on the gut and IBS. For some people, 5-HTP that will increase activity of serotonin makes it better. For others, 5-HTP that increases serotonin will make it worse, because it's not just a singular, well, everyone with IBS has decreased serotonin, or everyone with IBS has increased serotonin. It's everyone with IBS has dysregulated serotonin levels. For some, it's too much. For others, it's not enough. But for no one, is it right in the middle where it should be? And so we really get to personalize our approach for each person, knowing that we will not know ahead of time exactly, are they the ones that will respond better to 5-HTP or tryptophan or none of those? But I guarantee you that there are somatic exercises that will help regulate everyone. And as I think of the most important somatic exercises that I would do, it would be those that are really connecting with the gut the most. And as I think back on the somatic exercises that I teach in the 21-day journey, it's the feet, the heart, and the stomach, which isn't that surprising. Maybe the feet might be a new element for some people to realize how much the feet will feed back into the heart, into the stomach. But stomach support, especially for IBS, stomach support, even just a pillow will make your stomach feel safer, and feeling safer is going to help regulate reactivity. What about heat? What about weight? What are those ways that we can do somatic work with our stomach that will generate a sense of safer and help regulate reactivity? For the parts work, how can we create a different experience for those parts now? Well, for one, it's going to be able to be present with them. Because if they experienced terror, that meant that there was a time when they felt all alone. Well, we need to change that. So we need to be the ones that are now present for them. And we need to be the ones that understand them. They don't feel understood. They feel misunderstood. They feel that we blame them for when they shut down our body. And so being able to come in and say, I'm with you. Let me understand you. And let me just be with you. That's some essential parts work that will help regulate our reactivity. And then for the biology work, it's going to be not just the gut inflammation, but certainly that is part of it. We have a number of tools to reduce gut inflammation, but it's also reducing the irritability. And so looking and finding those factors that make our gut more irritated. If it's really reacting to gas and bloating, well, then what if we find those things, binders, charcoal, things that will reduce the irritability of the gut, that we can, again, create a sense of safer in the digestive system. And so through these pieces, that's how we really start to address the connection between IBS and early childhood trauma, which we're really going to define as experiencing terror in utero through 6 months of life. That seems to be the time span at which the global high intensity activation gets wired as a pattern into our nervous system. And so to finish up, I want to share with you what Emily said coming out of her insights about her gut issues and the pain that she had been experiencing. Let me share that again. For me, it hit it on the mark so much. Emily is the one. She had a lot of night terrors as a toddler, would cry and cry, and the adults in her life were telling her, "Why are you crying?" Creating that sense of, "I'm alone and I'm misunderstood." And the physical pain in her gut and the digestive issues that she has experienced throughout her lifetime into her adulthood have been so intense. And it's now coming out in that physical illness, right? Is that terror. And so here's what she said. "I want to go back to that 4-year-old self and tell her, I understand now why you are so terrified. I got you now. I got you now." And that's the sense that we need to create in our body, not just with our parts, but our body is, "I got you. I'm going to learn. I'm going to be on the same team with you. I'm going to find what's irritating you. I'm going to find what's creating sensitivity and reactivity. And I'm going to start doing it one step at a time, one thing at a time, as we start to bring regulation to the reactivity and just bring things into a more moderate response and break out of the extremes that cycle back and forth between activation and shutdown." And that's how we ultimately will get much better in the symptoms and improve one's quality of life with IBS. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Amy. And IBS, like every other condition associated with trauma and the nervous system, will always respond best by an integration of modalities, an integration of somatic work, an integration of parts work, and an integration of biology work. That is how we can create the container to keep the healing journey a safe one and not either get stuck or go too fast that we overwhelm our body in the process. Remember, we are working with early life terror underneath these symptoms. It is possible to do too much too fast. We actually have to be intentional and strategic in creating this capacity for how much we can unpack and uncover at a time. I have some helpful links and resources for you in the show notes, and I'm going to ask you to take a moment and rate the Biology of Trauma podcast. The ratings are the 5 number that you see. Rate the podcast 5 out of 5. And if you want to leave a review, that would be wonderful to have your feedback as well. Helpful links. You know, there are a number of other podcast episodes that are related to the freeze response, sensitivity, the nervous system. And so I'm going to refer you to these episodes, Recognizing and Overcoming the Freeze Response with Irene Lyon, parts 1 and 2. And that will talk about cycling back and forth between the sympathetic and the freeze responses that are characteristic of experiencing IBS. The role trauma plays in highly sensitive people. I will have the link to that specific podcast episode, more into the global high intensity activation. The other one is, what is the parasympathetic state and why does it matter? I will have the link to that podcast episode. Finally, I will have a link to the podcast episode on when trauma has made it unsafe to feel safe. What do we do? The role of neuroception, vagal efficiency, and looking at how that influences the global high intensity activation and will keep us stuck in our symptoms. Other helpful resources, if you are attracted to the attachment topic, I will include a link to my attachment trauma roadmap. I will also include a link to my attachment pain quiz where you can determine your type of attachment pain. There are 6 different attachment pains. If you're ready to get started, you will want to take the foundational journey with me, a 6-week guided journey into your nervous system, forming that foundation of regulation that we need to do the deeper work. And finally, if you really want to start addressing the biology, I'm going to refer you to a product that's called C60. This is a powerful antioxidant. And when we are talking about terror that we experienced in early life, there is a lot of oxidative stress that builds up in our system. And we need tools to address that biology piece specifically. And C60 is one of my favorite tools for oxidative stress. I also need you sleeping well, because there's nothing like poor sleep that will affect our gut and keep us stuck in that hypersensitivity and hyperreactivity. And so I will put the link to my Trimagnesium Sleep, the powder that I use in order to give my body magnesium, help it relax, give it all it needs to do the cleanup work that we do when we are asleep, and help my gut have the good sleep that it needs. Thank you again. Please take a moment to rate this podcast a 5 out of 5. It does help others find information that might be exactly what they needed to hear today. You would be making a difference for another human being who has been lost and needs some help. I'm Dr. Amy, and until next time, lots of love.
Thank you for joining me today. If you enjoyed today's show, be sure to subscribe. We definitely will learn, laugh, and sometimes cry together on this healing journey, and you won't want to miss an episode. Give my podcast 5 stars, share it with a friend or colleague. If you felt an impact, as it truly helps get the word out and breaking the paradigm of how we do trauma work. I look forward to seeing you back here next week. Until then, this is your host, Dr. Amy, sending you lots of love.